in Harlan Crewe, and I'm talking to High Chapman. I was born in Bristow and went to school in Bristow, and we're going to reminisce a little bit about what High remembers. About his early life, about his grandfather, and how he came to come there, and just anything. High, start in and say your first memories about Bristow.
Well, my first memories about Bristow started when I was real young, when I was pretty active around the place. My grandfather Chapman would take me around with him, and my grandfather Tyus, he was pretty active in the Bristow settlement because he came from Birmingham, Alabama, and moved his family up there. He was a United States Marshal at Birmingham while his uncle was United States Senator. After his senator decided not to run anymore, why, he was the United States Marshal sent to Indian Territory.
Do you remember about what year that was?
I don't remember what year it was. It was a time that Parker was sent to Fort Smith, way, way back there. Bristow was just a crossroads.
Yeah,
and
okay.
At that time. And his job was to come in here and ride herd on the people that was hauling whiskey from Texas. They'd go to Gainesville, Texas, and they'd take a schooner wagon, camp on Red River, unload half of their gallon jugs on the Red River bank, go into Gainesville and fill up the half that they took into Gainesville with them, come back to Red River and fill it up with water. Come on in and trade this whiskey to the Indians for hides and furs and cattle and horses that they would steal around there and gather up.
Yeah.
And that was his job mainly.
He was riding herd on the whiskey. I mean, but then it's 50 in there, 3,300. And they would drink
this stuff and go on a masquerade party and run people out and kill them and murder them. One particular instant, my mother told me about her father was the time that he rescued Tall Foster and his family and put them under the meeting house underneath the floor while the Harjos went on a drunken rampage, and burned their house down, stole their horses, and burned all their hay up.
Oh, my goodness.
And that is one of the things, and Tall Foster come over to my house while I lived in Bristow and told me about that. And that was his deal. While he was on this assignment, why, he became friends with Alfalfa Bill Murray.
And what was his name? Now, this was your mother's father.
Tom Tyus.
Tom Tyus. Yes. Okay.
While he was on this assignment in the Red River part of it, why, he run on to Bill Murray, Alfalfa Bill. They became real good friends. And they came in, go down to the valley and come back to the settlement of Bristow. And next time he'd go out, by, he'd sickle down through Murray County and see what is now Murray County. It was just territory then.
Yeah.
And run on to the Murray family. And let's see, one other thing he became.
Well, I understood that he didn't carry a gun.
No.
He was a marshal and didn't carry a gun.
He was a marshal and didn't carry a gun. And that led to his downfall a little later on down the road, but he would go, and if he was going to pick you up, he'd go tell you, okay, old buddy, I want to see you at the jailhouse at such and such time. Come one or two ways. You can come peaceful by yourself, or I'll come get you one way or the other. If I come get you, I'll come get you. Be first, if it has to be that way. Yeah. He didn't. He didn't carry a gun. He was a husky, tough old codger, from what I hear. I was so little when he was killed that I didn't know him. Actually, I'm just getting my information from my mother and uncle. And he was a great friend of Bill Tillman's, and Bill Tillman and Marcellette Guthrie.
Where did your father come from to Bristow then?
My father?
Your father.
My grandfather and my father came from Chandler. They settled on a homestead over 4 miles north of Chandler and 2 east. And when the run was on, well, they moved down there.
Yeah.
And then they settled on, I think it's 160 acres over there. And my grandfather didn't particularly like the thing. And then he came to Bristow and bought the place out east of town where he lived until he died.
Yeah.
And my father also bought a little tract out there east of town, Bristow.
Well, what year were you born in?
I was born in 1912.
So Bristow wasn't not very large when you were born then.
No, Bristow, I can remember Bristow when it had 5 cotton gins and the main street was 2 blocks long. And there wasn't no pavement on the streets of any kind. They had 2 watering troughs. One watering trough was at the intersection of 7th and Main Street now. And the other one was down at about 4th Street, right about where that little hamburger place used to be.
Yeah.
Right in there.
Well, now, getting back to your grandfather just for a second, it seems to me that I've heard you say he had something to do with the one-room, single-cell jail that was on the property between 7th and 8th Street, where Wells Food Market is now, be just across the road from the DX Bulk Station.
That's right. While he was assistant deputy United States Marshal there, they built that little jail. And that was the escape-proof jail in this part of the country, that the biggest part of the marshals. Uncle Billy Freshard bringing people into that jail, and the marshal from Guthrie bring it in. And that jail remained there until just about maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago.
Yeah, until about 1976 or 7, long in there.
And they was going to move it out to the Veterans and Foreign Wars area, and they got in there, and by golly, they didn't have anything to move it.
Yeah,
they had to tear it, destruct it before they could get it out of there.
Right, it wasn't movable.
No,
it was the walls were extremely thick on it, and they concrete and rock in the base and foundation went down so deep that they couldn't move it.
They couldn't root it out.
They had to destruct it. They built a real jail.
They had one that they wouldn't escape out of. Of course, it wasn't. There wasn't no modern facilities. They didn't have anything in it but just a room and a place for the marshal when he'd come in there. And
well, if you were born in 12, then where did you start to? Where did you start school? Where was the school when you first started?
The school that I started to was the old Washington School. It was the old square building that finally burnt down there. Oh, I guess I'd been going to school there through 2 or 3 years, and it burned. And then we had to go to school in the churches.
Yeah.
And we went to school in different churches, and we'd have this class in one church and that class in another church.
Until Do you remember what grade you were in when that school burned?
I was in the 3rd grade when that school burned. Oh, wait a minute, 2nd grade.
Well, you'd have been about 8 years
old. I've been about 8 years
old. Yeah.
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 years old.
Well, that would have been roughly in 1920.
It was the
school burned.
19 or 20 when the school burned, as near as I can recall. And they built a new school, the school that's there now. And we went on to school there.
Well, I don't want to leave your grandfather too quickly now. You were saying that he got killed, and you remember about what year this was and what the circumstances were.
Yes, from what told me, my mother and my uncle.
Yeah.
My granddad served as Deputy United States Marshal until he resigned there, and then he went as City Marshal for this little town of Settlement of Bristow. And where the Presbyterian Church now stands, there was a story-and-a-half building there. Well, I'm getting ahead of my story. While he was a city marshal, he run a livery stable. Livery stable was where the Rolling Hotel is right now.
While he was marshal, he ran the stable.
Yeah, while he was marshal, he ran the stable. And then Tom Slick came down and rented all of his rigs and only used one of them there for a week to go out in different places and lease land and around Slick and Cushing and then around there. He'd only used one rig, but he leased all of them, and there wasn't any rigs to hire.
Right.
Well, then just about a year after that, why, this place where he was killed is down where the Presbyterian Church is now. There was a story and a half frame house, had a wood fence around it, had a gate, front gate on it where they opened the gate to walk up to the porch. They had a chain there with a bunch of iron hanging on it, so it'd draw it to when they pulled it to, it'd draw it to and close it. And this desperado, who they was wanting real bad, was reported to have come to this house. This house was a half-breed Indian lady that run the house. And it wasn't, she kept, took in these guys hiding from the law and this and the other. They reported that he was down there, so my grandfather decided to go down and tell him what he wanted him to do. And he goes down, and when he opens the gate, and steps up on the porch. When he steps up on the porch, this outlaw shoots through the door and empties a six-shooter in his chest.
Wow.
And when they heard the shooting, well, here come people running, this outlaw took off. And they didn't get him for about 6 years after that. They finally caught him, but 6 years, because he took off and went to Mexico. And my granddad lived from that evening for about 2 or 3 days. And that was in 1911.
Did you ever hear your mother say whether this was on the very edge of town, or was it this building on beyond it, west, or was this right at the edge of town?
This was right at the edge of town. See, at that time, Bristow was just a small, little small place, it was just a small area there, about four blocks around there. And when you got past the road, where the Rolling Hotel is now, where the livery stable was, well, you was getting out in the country.
Yeah.
His livery stable was right at the edge of what was the community of Bristow.
Right. And, well, did he supply, he supplied rigs, which I suppose was a buggy and a team, or maybe a buggy and one horse, I don't know. Did he also supply teams to haul, and wagons to haul equipment with?
No, he had hacks, what they call hacks and buggies. And he didn't do that, but there was people there later on that did. Now, my grandfather Chapman, when he came from Chandler over there and settled at this place, he had three teams, and he was a freighter from Guthrie to Bristow. Take him about 6 or 7 days to go to Guthrie and come back with a load of groceries.
Pick up freight.
Yeah. He picked up freight at the depot there for Jim Jackson Grocery and Jim Bogle Grocery and Hamilton and Harrington and Wolf and Harrington.
Mm-hmm.
That's early day Abrahams. He hauled freight for Abrahams.
Why in the world would he go to Guthrie instead of of, say, to Tulsa? Was there not a railhead in Tulsa?
No railhead here in Tulsa. Guthrie was the only railhead.
Guthrie was
See, Guthrie was it, because there was no railheads in Tulsa. And then when they did get a railhead to Drumright a little later on, and he cut his haul from Guthrie to Drumright to Bristow. But then when they, it was later than that when they got the, seems as though the problem was getting across the river.
You're probably right.
There's a railhead here, but it's on this side of the river, the north side of the river. He couldn't get across the river with his rigs to pick up the groceries.
Right, but he could go to Guthrie.
He could go to Guthrie, and that was way back in the early days.
Well, there must have been a railhead at Drumright then before there was in Bristow.
Yeah, I think there was. I think there was a railhead at Drumright. Either that or someone had a freight line from Guthrie to Drumright, because a little later on, after he started his dray work there, he shortened the route from Guthrie to Drumright to Bristow.
And as far as you know, was there anybody else hauling, doing the same kind of work, or was he the sole supplier for the grocery stores? I mean, he was the freight man.
Yeah, he at that time was the freight man there in Bristow.
And the only one.
And the only one, because I think he was the only one that had stuff to do it with.
Yeah.
And
I wouldn't be surprised.
And that's... And that was it there.
Well, then after the railroad came in, and I don't really know what year that was either, did he get into other kind of hauling then?
Oh, yes. He got into other kind of hauling even before, even while he was hauling from Guthrie over here. He sold sand that he dug out of the Sand Creek bottom on his farm there. All the sidewalks in Bristow, all the concrete streets in Bristow has got sand that was hauled in from there into Bristow to the contractor that put the cement for the sidewalks. The concrete streets down.
Say, that brings up another thing. All the brick streets in Bristow are bound to be on a bed of sand. And I've asked Arthur Foster and everybody else I can think of, where in the world did the bricks come from? Did they come from Sepulpa, Stroud, Tulsa, Guthrie? Did you ever hear anybody say?
I never heard anybody say where the bricks came from, but I'm just trying to think. I can't tell you for sure, Harlan, but now the sand, I know where the sand came from.
It came from
my granddad's farm out there. He used to town. He hauled it in there.
Well, there was enough of it there.
Yeah, there was plenty of it there, because there, right out there at that area, there's about 10 acres of the prettiest golden grain sand that you've ever seen.
I'll agree with you. I've been out there. Yeah, it is good-looking sand.
And he sold it, I think he delivered a yard and a half in town for $3.
And I suppose that all the loading and unloading was done with this old long-handled shovel.
They finally got smart and put 2x8s down in the wagon bed and so that they could lift them up and turn them and dump the sand out on the ground instead of having to shovel it out. But it took two or three years for them to figure that out.
Right.
But, that was it. But now getting back to this hauling.
Yeah.
There's when the oil fields came into Bristow, my dad went into the, well, my dad helped my grandfather haul from Guthrie over to Bristow. And he had his own team. And when the oil fields started coming in around Drumright, he had go from Bristow to Drumright and do teaming from one well to the other, haul the tools from one well, and because they didn't have trucks then, they all had to be moved by teams. And my dad was a teaming contractor, and my granddad was, and my uncle was too. And in Bristow, there was 5 different oil field teaming contractors there. And one was a fellow that moved from Drumright over to Bristow. His name was Doc Martin. And his barn was right where your office used to be before he moved over on 9th Street.
On 7th Street.
On 7th Street. Yeah. And they, at one time, why, he had a fire there and burned up a lot of horses.
My goodness.
Right there on the, where your oil company office used to sit. Then right across the street from where your office is now, L.C. Jones started out in the teaming business right there. He had his,
that would be on 9th Street just east of the railroad tracks.
East of the railroad tracks and east of the gin.
Right, east
right
of the
gin. Where the old Wilcox Oil Company had a little gasoline racks and
yeah,
stuff
they had
between
racks
Charles's house and the gin.
Right.
L.C. Jones started there. And then he migrated on to Seminole, and then Alec McClutchin was another one that L.C. Jones, you know, became one of the largest trucking contractors in the United States.
Oh, is that now Jones Truck Line?
Yeah, no, that's, you're thinking about the Jones Truck Line here. It's
Truck
Line that used to be at Oklahoma City.
Oh, yes.
It was L.C. Jones Trucking.
So he went from teams right on into trucks?
He went right on from teams into trucks. My dad did the same thing.
Yeah.
And Alec McClutchin. He left Bristow at midnight, broke, going everybody in town. And he left, and he didn't stop till he got to Kilgore, Texas. He moved his teams out, lock, stock, and barrel at midnight.
Right.
Left old Basil Henson with a big feed bill. And he got down to Kilgore and went from teams to trucks, and from trucks to the, he was one of the Texas millionaires now. His sons are, he's dead.
Yeah.
But his sons, he went from teams to trucks to oil, and he's one of the large millionaires in Texas.
And he started out, he left Bristow broke.
He left Bristow broke, a lot of them did.
Yeah.
And there was any number of teaming contractors there in the early days. But getting back to the early Bristow, at 7th Street and Main Street, on each corner there was a bank. And when they first started there, there was no pavement. It was all dirt other than this water tank sitting out for the horses sitting out in the middle of the street. When you walked across the street, why, you'd have to walk in mud.
Yeah, right.
And so they finally decided they'd put crosswalks from each side, east to west there,
right,
and north to south there at that corner.
Yeah. They did that at 7th Street before they did it at 6th Street. Then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
7th Street was
really
it was
the really center of town.
It was the center of the town because there wasn't any much activity down further. When you go down past 6th Street, why, by golly, you was getting kind of out of town again.
Getting out of town already.
Yeah, and at that time, so my grandfather hauled the sand in off of the place there, and they built these things over there. That was way, way early. And I can remember when they decided to pave the streets, the main street there, but they wanted somebody to haul these crosswalks out of there.
Yeah, get them out of the way.
Yeah, get them out of the way. My grandfather went in and loaded them up on a wagon and hauled them out to his place, and they're still out there.
No.
He still got them.
No kidding. You mean
they're still out.
Maybe I better go out and take a picture.
Well, we'll, as soon as I can get down there, how quick would you want to take a picture?
Oh, anytime that you happen to be down, well, we'll go take a picture.
I'm fouled up here as soon as I get squared up.
Well, I know you
drive the
up.
Car and get down there. Well, we'll go out there and we'll take a picture
all
of that.
All right.
And because
nice to do that.
They're They're early history of Boone, boy.
Yeah.
There wasn't but one, two, three, four of them. Was all the crosswalks there was in Bristow at that time. And
did they ever build wooden sidewalks in Bristow?
Oh, wooden sidewalks was before
the crosswalks.
Before the crosswalks, but yeah. They didn't cross the streets. They just built built them in front of the businesses
houses.
Because the wagons were bringing cotton and freight in, would bust the wooden ones down if they went across it. So they just built them in front of the stores there.
Yeah.
And that was pretty interesting. I wouldn't change my life in any way coming along, because I came from the horse and buggy days right on up to putting the man on the moon.
Right.
And we licked Harlan. We are living in the most advanced age of time right now,
It's amazing. It's mind-boggling, really. It really is.
Well, getting back to Bristow, there's an old fella down there that the Bristow people will know. And his name, they called him Dad Center. And he did more for Bristow. Along, all of the young ones knew him. He sold produce there, garden stuff. He raised a large family.
Center?
Yeah, S-E-N-T-E-R.
S-E-N-T-E-R.
Dad Center.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he had, I believe, one, two, three sons, and maybe a daughter or two. Henry Center, his wife was postmaster there. He was postmaster until he died. He got burned in a gasoline explosion.
So Dora was his wife.
Dora was
Henry's wife.
Dora was Henry's wife. Then Alvin was Dad Center's son. He was street commissioner there for Bristow when they did the street work with the with a horse and mules. And old Dad Center, he started out in the summertime while he had an old hack, and he had little bells on his horse. He'd get ice cream and go down the street. He was the first ice cream peddler. he was a good humor man. Then, when the Depression came along, the old gentleman went downtown. Everybody was on starvation there. I say everybody, not everybody, but the biggest part of the people.
Everybody was pretty hard up. We remember that.
And there was a lady there who ran a little hotel. It's about where Shamus's dry goods store is, upstairs. And I believe her name was Malby Rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And people didn't think very much of her. They all wanted to run her out of town, all that stuff, because her hotel wasn't just exactly what it was meant to be.
You wouldn't call it real high class.
It wasn't a high class hotel. People didn't think very much of her.
Right.
But she owned that building. She paid for that building. She owned the building downstairs. She owned the rooms upstairs. There was a car agency in the place down under there, but it all went broke during the Depression and had to leave and go get out of there. Dad Center went down and asked her if she would mind if he used that building. And she asked him what he wanted it for. He said he wanted to put in a soup kitchen.
Yeah.
And she said, "Well, now, where are you going to get the stuff to do this work with?
Make your soup."
He said, "Well, never mind. I'll get it." She said, "Well, I've got an old stove up here. We'll just take it down. We'll hook it up. This old lady paid the gas bill for the stove and furnished this building."
Yeah.
Dad Center would get up at daylight and go downtown, and with baskets he carried on his arm, he'd go around the stores where they'd cut the leaf off of a cabbage or celery that was bad. They'd give it to him, and he'd take it there and dump it and go get more. And then he'd after he made the rounds of the little place there, he'd go down and he'd make soup out of all the stuff he got. He'd get a he'd get a dog bone, he'd take it down, he'd make soup out of it.
Right.
And about 11:30, people had come down with five-pound lard buckets to get that soup.
Right. He made that much.
But he made
five-pound lard buckets.
You know, for five-pound lard buckets.
Right.
Okay, they'd come down. And Harlan, I have seen them lined up there from center of that block up to the Community State Bank, back to the alley. From the center of that block down to Fifth Street, up to Brace's Electric Place.
Gracious.
During the Depression.
And he gave it away.
He gave it away.
I'll be darned.
That old man, he saved a lot of people's hides down there. And if you'd go up to some of those people and say, "My goodness, I saw you in the soup line back in 1928 and 29. They'd want to shoot you now. But now, he did it now.
Yeah. Well, it was a great thing for Bristol.
It was a good thing. He did it.
Yeah, and it was great for him to have done such a thing.
He enjoyed doing it. Yep. He enjoyed doing it. He was a swell old man. He lived up on 6th Street. You remember where this guy used to run this junkyard south of town? He lived between Oak and the next street west on 6th, on the north side of the street, about the middle of the block.
The junkyard that used to be Arcady. On Chestnut, Ben Arcady.
Ben Arcady.
Right.
Well, Dad Center lived where Ben Arcady did, but did not in the house that was there now. It was the house they built. That center did a lot for Bristow and for the people in Bristow during the hard times.
Well, let's get back to some of your early school and after your grade school, was there a junior high school in Bristow at the time you got into seventh grade?
Sir? Yes, sir. There was a junior high school there. It was where junior high school was right back of the old high school building.
Yeah.
There on 9th Street, and it was back of the 9th Street, the big square high school building that's there now. It used to be the high school building.
Yeah.
That was junior high school.
That was junior high school in there.
Yes, sir.
Was the old, when I was in school, we called it the old band building. It was a three-story brick building. On 10th Street, in the block that all the schools are in now, and between Edison and what was the junior high school when I went to school, was that building there when you went to junior high school?
Yes, it was, but they tore it down along in there, I believe. That building stayed there till after I got out of high school.
Yeah, because it was there when I graduated from high school in 1937.
Yeah.
And it was still there then.
Yeah. Well, it was still there until about the World War II time they tore it down. The Edison School was here, and here was this building we're talking about.
Yeah,
now, that used to be the old Bristow High School
building.
That's
what I wondered. What was it used for?
That was the old Bristow High School
building. That was the high school.
That was the high school.
Oh, great.
That was the high school before any of the rest of the schools was there.
Yeah.
And they used it for, we had demolay meetings there, and we had Boy Scout meetings there in the basement, and while we was going on, they had quit using it for classrooms. The Edison School was here, and the junior high school building was here. And the high school building was that big three-story building, double-story building, where it is now.
What year did you graduate from high school?
I should have graduated in high school in 1930, but I left school when I was a junior and went over to A&M College.
Yeah.
took a special entrance examination and went in college to study dairy husbandry and butter making, cheese making, right, and ice cream making.
Right.
And everything was going real good then. And the Depression hit, and I had to drop out. So I came back, went back to school, and I think it was 1930 I graduated.
Yeah.
I graduated with Arthur Foster and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe your sister.
I think my older sister was
in that class.
Yeah, she was in that class.
She was in that class.
Right. Yeah. Okie doke. Well, your dad was in the teaming and trucking business.
He was in the teaming and trucking business.
Didn't you work with him for a while in that part of the business before you went out on your own?
Yes. I helped him drive teams in the summertime. He had three teams, and when school was out in the summer, when I was around 11 or 12 years old, he would fire a skinner, and I'd drive the team through the summer months.
Yeah.
Then, when school started, he'd hire another fella to drive the team, and I'd go back to school.
He'd go to school, and he'd take your place.
Yeah. Then when Christmas vacation had come, I'd help my dad to go out with the teams. And it's funny, we'd leave all the way from 4 o'clock in the morning and get back 8, 9, 10, sometimes midnight.
How far away did you, how wide a range did you cover?
Well,
how far did you go?
My dad would normally slick, which would be 8 or 10 miles.
Right.
And do whatever they had to do and then get back. And there's times when he had to be slick at daylight, he had to leave Bristow along about 3 o'clock in the morning.
So he'd be out to slick by daylight.
Yeah, I had to be out slick at daylight because it took about 2 or 2.5 hours to get out there in a wagon. And the times we'd work up the drum right, it'd take, we'd leave Bristow about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and it'd be up in the evening before we get to drum right, and then we'd have to bunk down under the wagon that night and do our work. It was a two-day operation.
To get to drum right.
And do some work.
I don't know, how did he find out where he was supposed to go? Did he have a telephone?
Well, at first he didn't, because the telephone system wasn't large enough to reach out to our house where we lived.
Right, it couldn't get out there. That's what I wondered.
There.
It didn't come out there yet.
And finally, it didn't get out there till about 16 or 17.
Yeah.
We got the telephone out there.
Right.
Because when the war was over, World War I, they called and told us the war was over.
Yeah.
And this, that, and the other.
So you remember the telephone. At the time the war was over, you did have a telephone.
We did have it. By the time World War I was over, we did have a telephone. And before then, whoever Dad was working for would get on a horse and ride out there and tell him where to go.
I see.
See, the tool pushers and the people that looking supervisors had horses. They rode horses.
Yeah.
They didn't have automobiles then.
Well, he helped move the strings of tools from well to well then at slick and drum right both.
Oh yeah, slick, drum right, Sepulpa, Kellyville, all around.
Did he haul any lumber that you remember to build those rigs, all those old wooden derricks out to slick?
Yes, sir. He hauled a lot of them out to slick. And at the 8 mile corner where used to be not Singer, but Citrin's place. He hauled all the derricks out there then.
Did he?
From Bristow. And he hauled from the lumber yard to sitting where right across the street from J&J Cafe was the main lumber yard there in Bristow.
Right. I can remember that.
And when he had hauled stuff from there to Slick and from there to different places. I can remember and when I was about, I wasn't big enough to drive a team for him then. We hauled the lumber from that lumber yard out to a well about 4 miles north of Bristow. There, Sinclair built, and you own that well now.
We own the well right now. Yeah, we do.
And by golly, it's on the west side of the highway, and it was in the middle of a cornfield when we hauled that rig out there. And it's an old board derrick, and it's the Sinclair Oil Company. But there's a lot of history around Bristow there. That
did he have these big wide tired wagons that had their low wheel on them? Seemed to me like they were oil field wagons, and the wheel was about 3.5 feet diameter, and the tread on them must have been 12 to 14 inches wide.
You're thinking about the boiler wagons.
That's the boiler wagon.
Eight wheels on them. Right. Big, wide wheels. The regular wagons, it took one team of horses to pull that wagon. It was so heavy.
Right.
And bulky. My dad had a team of horses that he worked on, what they call the wheelers, which was one that's hooked up to the tongue and right onto the wagon. And he had two other that he put out in the front, which would be a six-up, what they call a six-up.
Yeah.
And he'd hook up that deal. If he got an extra big boiler or extra heavy load, then he'd go over to his dad's and get two teams of his.
Two teams of him.
Yeah, and there's times when we had, that I've seen, that he had six pairs of horses out in front of that boiler wagon.
That's a pretty good-sized boiler wagon.
Yeah. It didn't make any difference about the size of the boiler. The deal was the terrain you had to...
Well, that's true. Some of it was pretty rough.
And it was rough, and some of it was soft, a lot softer than it is now.
Well, you know, when we have as much work to do in making a location in the times that we're working in right now, we have bulldozers and we have backhoes if we need them, and we can move that dirt around. We can actually move the dirt and scrape it away and make roads. And yet you see some of the places where they drilled these wells back in the late teens and in the 20s, and it makes you wonder how in the world they got there in the first place.
That's right, and you'll have to remember, those old boys was pretty salty. They was pretty smart to take what they had to work with and get done what they got done.
They really did. They really were.
And I've been out with my dad when we'd have to take a plow and a team, and where they'd build a slush pit, where they'd have to plow this dirt and then take a slip or a Fresno and scoop it over to make the rim, then you'd have to get in there and plow again.
And move it out.
Move it out again. And it'd take sometimes 3 or 4 days to build a slush pit at this well.
Well, did you stay out on the job at that time? You just stayed there and you got it done. And
that's right. If it was,
cooked on the job.
Yeah,
and
batched and whatever. And I can remember back in the early day, Davenport was on the boom. Why, Dad did an awful lot of work over there for Magnolia, and it was a day over there, and he'd stay 3 or 4 days. Well, somebody'd have to take him oats and hay for his teams.
Right.
And the team that he drove, each one of those horses weighed a ton.
2,000-pound horse.
And they took a bushel of oats each to feed him.
Gracious.
And he fed them 3 times a day. And
he was working them hard, so he had to feed them.
Had to feed them good.
Right.
And at night, he'd throw the baled hay down for a bed, and then he'd fix a place for them to have hay to eat while he was asleep and resting. If they wanted to eat hay, there's hay there for him.
Right.
And it took a load of hay. I've seen them when they get ready to go out to make a location at around where they couldn't drive back and forth. he'd take a load of hay, a load of oats, and a load of food,
right,
and go out there, and we'd stay there until
they got the job done. You remember the first well that you ever saw drilling, where it was, a drilling well?
Yes, I do. It was number one Red Bank, and it was out east of my dad owned a farm out there, and it was half a mile east of our house. And Dad would put me on his back. Piggyback over there after supper. We'd piggyback over there and sit on the lazy bench and visit with the driller and tool dresser while they was drilling.
Right.
And it was an old steam cable tool job. And it was where this place was, it was a mile and a half west of Mays Corner and 3/4 of a mile north.
Mays Corner. Right.
And
Mays Corner, for information, is northwest of town.
Yes, it was 9 miles northwest of town, but the roads have shortened.
Roads have changed now. It isn't quite that far.
It's not quite that far.
Right.
But that's where it is. I use Mays Corner to direct you to the spot.
Okay. Do you remember that Tim Cushing used to have an oil field tool house and machine shop, I guess, on the corner of, just east of the railroad tracks and on 8th Street, on the north side of the street where the barbecue, there's a barbecue place in there.
Yes, sir, I remember that place well because my dad hauled pipe casing and tools out of there, and I knew old man Tim, and I knew Chester, and I knew the fellow that their business manager. In fact, unless he's died in the last little while, his business manager lives here in Tulsa.
What was his name?
Hopper.
Wayne Hopper.
Wayne Hopper.
Wayne was business manager for Chester and Tim.
He was